The ONI Nightwire official Discord server is live. Be invited to discuss and run amok the content of each show, along with Halo's rich universe as a whole. All in the popular and comfortable format of Discord. Join the ONI Nightwire nightclub today. Invite and link in the description of every episode via the Patreon at patreon.com/ONI Nightwire and the Twitter at ONI14122494BB. We will see you there. Welcome back to another ONI Nightwire, recording October 11th, 2560, currently 500 meters below the surface of Ka'amati, enjoying the warm but albeit a bit suffocating climate control provided by nearly a million eusocial topics of today's episode. I am currently on a scientific observation duty to enhance the finer understanding of our curious and chitinous friends, the Yanme'e. As always, if you can hear me in your now, then you are receiving transmission from my now via my perfectly tuned osmium cylindrical foreigner deep space amplification antenna. And things should sound fast and low. Today is our weekly monument to all your Mondays. And in building today's monument, we will need the choir-like cacophony of clattering mandibles provided free for our listening pleasure, as well as a particularly elusive and tragic Spartan fire team. And why don't we stretch it out with a peek inside the war chest, today's hardware teardown being insectoid, if only in name. So listen in, fasten in, and tune out to the live sound of the Nightwire. The Yanme'e homeworld is Palamok, an Earth-like planet, but twice the size with over twice the gravity, 2.2 Gs. Palamok is a flat and geographically featureless world, with little tectonic or volcanic activity. The planet features a warm atmosphere and a stable environment. The planet's high gravity is what led to the Yanme'e, hereforth I will pronounce as Yanme, evolving with hard shells that are able to absorb a large amount of damage. Due to their planet's high gravity, the Yanme'e are only capable of short bursts of flight on Palamok, though they can fly quite well in 1G environments. The Yanme'e have several colonies throughout the Nepret system, with Ogui and Ka'amoti being the most prominent. The Yanme'e share many similarities with earthly beetles and colonial insects. They are bipedal arthropods with hard exoskeletons made from a glossy, chitinous substance, as well as two pairs of veined wings. These adaptions are a response to the high gravity of Yanme'e homeworld Palamok. Their shells allow them to withstand hard falls, and the thick atmosphere of Palamok allows the winged Yanme'e to achieve just enough lift to perform fluttering leaps or naturally short bursts of flight. In lower gravity environments, Yanme'e are capable of using their wings for actual aerial maneuvering, but the weight of their exoskeletons prevents them from outright flying. When the Covenant discovered this natural ability, scientists extended their flight capabilities by fixing gravity-dampening modules to their bodies. The module adjustment gave the Yanmei the ability to take flight freely, and the species proved to be impressive flyers, particularly on worlds that had less gravity than Palamok. Yanmei are also impressively strong, despite their frail appearance. They can also be seen lifting their enemies off the ground to impressive heights and tragic fates. Unlike Earth insects, which have 3 body segments, Yanmei have 5. A head, a cephalothorax, a thorax, a pelvis, and an abdomen. The head supports a pair of feathery sensory antennae and luminous compound eyes that give the species adaptive vision. The mouth consists of several sets of mandibles, like those found on Earth's insects. Their hands sport opposable thumbs and 3 dexterous fingers. Yanmei are polydexterous, meaning that they are capable of using both their prehensile hands and feet to operate tools. The primary pair of legs are attached to a pelvis-like structure, while a smaller pair is attached to the front of the abdomen. Although they generally use their primary set of limbs, Yanmei can use this last set of limbs to operate weapons, grasp enemies, or latch onto ceilings and hang down vertically during sleep. The Yanmei have extremely sharp claws located on all limbs that they can use to defend themselves if necessary, though they prefer to avoid close quarters combat due to their frailer frame. Yanmei are a carnivorous species. Early in their history, the Yanmei developed and bred types of feral livestock for food. There is essentially no apparent sexual dimorphism between male and female Yanmei. Yanmei exoskeletons are brightly colored, with different hues representing different functions or class. Adolescent or pupil Yanmei have translucent shells that glow luminescent yellow and orange. Almost nothing is known about the Yanmei life cycle beyond the fact that the queen itself lays eggs. It is possible that the Yanmei go through a complete metamorphosis, including an egg, larva, pupa, and adult stage, as many terrestrial insects and arthropods do. Yanmei are a eusocial species, and therefore their intelligence is geared towards working in concert with large groups. They can accomplish tasks swiftly and effectively when working together, and their knowledge of machinery is rivaled only by the forerunner-bred Hiragok. However, they lack individuality because of their hive lifestyle. Their instincts and societal conditioning suppress creative thought and encourage total obedience to authority. They do not appear to experience higher emotions. It is known that they are able to feel jealousy, as seen when they killed the Hiragok lighter than some, because he usurped their role as technician on board Rapid Conversion. Yanmei were allegedly incapable of feeling fear. Despite their hive-minded nature, Yanmei are still individually quite intelligent. Certain Yanmei are unable to function in a hive society due to a form of personality disorder. These unmutuals are capable of independent thought and tactical planning, although they tend to be extremely violent and aggressive as a result. However, some of these Yanmei appear to be very intelligent independently. One individual was able to tamper with the inner circuitry of a UNSC interrogator device and allow the device to translate the Yanmei language into English in a matter of seconds. The Yanmei language is a cacophony of high-pitched clicking or whining from the rubbing of their waxy, leaf-like wings. They are also known to communicate sonically with loud shrieks and screeches, as well as through the use of pheromones. Combat units will usually elect an attaché to serve as a translator, learning how the other races communicate and relaying the relevant information to the other Yanmei. However, the attaché still does not socialize with other species, only learning enough of their allies to keep the other Yanmei organized and informed. By 2552, the Yanmei language was still not completely translated by the Office of Naval Intelligence due to lack of information about the species. Hence why I am here today. ONI's interrogator translation software was only capable of poorly imitating Yanmei clicks, but the output was unintelligible to the species as a whole. Working on that. The Yanmei are an insectoid species with a hive-minded social structure, as we've just learned. Their society thus results and consists of reproductive queens, reproductive male drones, and non-reproductive workers and soldiers, much like in many hives on Earth. It is unknown if the soldier and worker caste is specific to one gender or another, but it is confirmed that the Yanmei worker, Hopalong, was a male. Because of their eusocial nature, they can be extremely dogmatic and hive-minded, a trait that may have made for an easy conversion into the Covenant hierarchy. The Hive Queen is the center of Yanmei society and culture, to the point of her being the reason for the species' technological progress and advancement. This includes most major advances in science and other technology that typically results in emphasized protection and augmentation of the queen and her hives. Yanmei obeyed the commands of the higher castes without question in the Covenant hierarchy, but had little concept of religion and did not partake in social norms due to communication difficulties amongst the species. They referred to the Sanshayum as queens, a remnant of their former Hive Polamok lifestyle. They did not interact with other Covenant member races except to trade resources and to serve within the military, where they typically served as mechanics and repair crews on warships. Although highly skilled with technology, they aren't nearly as effective as Huragok. This has often brought them into a state of rivalry with Huragok and, in jealousy, the Yanmei aboard Rapid Conversion killed lighter than some, as aforementioned. Yanmei were initially conscripted into the Covenant only as mechanics and laborers. The Yanmei were not as technically skilled as the Huragok, but they still proved to be incredibly competent mechanics and were efficient at general maintenance. After years of serving in only custodial positions within the Covenant military, the Covenant had eventually developed numerous combat rules for the Yanmei, largely due to their impressive flight capabilities. They are typically used for surprise aerial ambushes and assaults, such as catching infantrymen off guard and diverting their attention so that their Covenant allies may gain the upper hand. The Yanmei physiology made the species well-suited in infiltration rules. Yanmei are quite capable of using most light Covenant weaponry, and depending on their rank, may wield plasma pistols, needlers, and plasma rifles. The limb dexterity of the Yanmei allows them to have competent aiming skills while in flight or while they are climbing over a structure. In addition, their speed and adept sight made the Yanmei one of the most threatening infantry units in the entire Covenant's history. Yanmei were very territorial over the tasks they were assigned to, Although the Yanmei would respect the Covenant's religious principles and would loyally obey their Sangheili and Sanshayum commanders, they had no particular passion for the Covenant religion or desire to follow Covenant social normalities. Due to their lack of individual initiative, the Yanmei remained low in the Covenant hierarchy, often commanded on the battlefield by Sangheili, Hirohane, or Kigyar leaders. Due to their low position, the Yanmei were not represented on the High Council, but their interests were instead vetted by the Ministry of Concert through an elected queen. During large-scale ground engagements, Yanmei have a tendency to entrench themselves and establish hives within enemy territory, as seen during the Fall of Reach and the conflicts in New Mombasa. This can make them a persistent threat, as the hives provide a constant supply of Yanmei to reinforce occupying Covenant troops. The first thing the drones usually do when they set up in a place is build a hive made of spit, shit, and whatever else they can find lying around. It's how they mark a conquered area as their own. A quote by Gunnery Sergeant Edward Buck. Yanmei have the ability to form fully functional hives at incredibly fast rates. During the Battle of New Mombasa, the Yanmei generated a vast hive structure within the city's data center within a matter of hours. Hives are primarily constructed from a collection of mud, wood, and cellulose materials that is then mixed with Yanmei excretions, which are formed into large stalactite-shaped structures. Yanmei are able to establish hives in any location where sufficient raw material was available. However, hives are most commonly found underground or in vast jungle canopies, like the ones that cover a majority of Palamok's surface. The Yanmei have also formed densely packed hives within the massive geological structures on Palamok's moons of Khe Maudi, where I reside currently, and Agui. Both, if I haven't mentioned already, are satellites of Palamok. A defining characteristic of Yanmei hives is that they radiate heat to their surroundings from vent-like openings, elevating the temperature over a large area. During their service within the Covenant, Yanmei that are deployed in combat roles are often ordered to create temporary makeshift hives that allow the rest of the Covenant military to easily access enemy territory. The hives served as Covenant strongholds for invading forces, often hidden within enemy territory on cavernous ceilings or underground wholesale. Hives were established on Earth and Verge by the Yanmei during the Human Covenant War. They would often use these hives to show that they had conquered an area of a world. The Yanmei race, inclining towards a hive-like and eusocial society, are divided by several castes. Most individuals fall into one of the three main distinct Yanmei castes: domestic, worker, or protector. The colorations of the Yanmei shell will indicate its caste and function within said caste. All castes are subservient to the overarching hive queen. The worker caste is similar to the worker castes of similar function found within many eusocial earth-based insect species. This caste was artificially merged with the protector caste by the Covenant, following the species' incorporation into the Covenant. The caste is likely responsible for creating the hives and were likely employed by the Covenant in custodial positions. When the Covenant forced Yanmei workers into combat positions aboard Rapid Conversion, several individuals became unusually clumsy and flustered, becoming confused over the change in task. Within the protector caste, there appear to be many ranks. Miners are the most common form and have a very low position within former Covenant society. Majors likely represent higher class in the Protector caste. They have larger wings, fly faster, and are more skilled in combat, often carrying needlers. The Hive Queen is the central figure of the Hive as a whole. Her primary role, as with ants and bees, is to propagate the species. The Queen serves as the leader of the Yanmei within her hive. The Yanmei lead an aggressively matriarchal society, with the other castes of the Yanmei serving the Queen and carrying out her orders to ensure the preservation of the hive. Yanmei queens are responsible for the species' reproduction and way of life, leading to the well-being of a queen being the uppermost importance of a hive. The queen is substantially larger than the other castes of the race, with distended, egg-producing abdomens and thick legs. It is unlikely that a single queen could support an entire species, so there are probably multiple, though possibly subordinate, queens amongst hives. Yanmei males that are unable to fit within the caste system or are born with destructive tendencies are known as aforementioned as unmutuals and are exiled from their hives. These are drones unable to work in concert with the rest of their hive they are born to, and have in fact been known to go on rampages, destroying nests, smashing eggs, even murdering other adult Yanmei. They are generally imprisoned to prevent them from communicating with the rest of the hive, and on at least one known occasion, have been sent to mine Helium-3 on planets captured by Covenant. Yanmei in these penal colonies are often guarded by Kigyar, who may work them to death. On one occasion, a Kigyar actually removed the legs of a drone whom Spartan Team Black named Hopalong. He helped the Spartans infiltrate their objective, deceiving them enough to release the rest of the drone prisoners therein. The domestic caste forms another large division within the Yanmei caste structure, but its function remains unknown. It is likely related to the wingless males that serve the queens. I have a personal fondness, as I think you've realized, with all of the post-Covenant species, with each of them, but with the Yanmei especially. Early on in my discovery that such a species existed, I've had the dream to study their culture, their special language, their everything. I'm quite fascinated by them, which is interesting because I cannot really stand bugs. I don't want to sound diminutive. I don't want to call or refer to the species as a bug, but Earth's bugs and the bugs of Earth's many colonies are not my favorite in the world. I mean, I don't go around smashing and swatting at flies any more than I go around smashing or swatting at Yanmei. But I'm not a big insect guy. But the Yanmei in particular, I find their well-meaning nature and their eusocial tendencies to be of interest. And it always has been. Ever since really I first saw the horrible camera footage, helmet cam footage of them pulling Marines away, and the resulting blood-curdling footage that existed of them during the height of the Human Covenant War. But there have been, admittedly, anecdotal references and dialogues between their species and humanity, and overall, it seems that they are, as much as they enjoy working in concert with each other, they prefer to work alongside the other alien races. I would say as much, if not more, than the Ungoi. They are just incredibly willing to cooperate, which, as you've learned from my little broadcast here, I am a huge proponent of galaxy-wide. In reference to Spartan Team Black, I would like to get into today's daily dossier, The Blood at the Heart of Halo, the characters. Today's characters are Black Team, consisting of the four conscripted siblings of the Spartan II program. Margaret-053, or Black One, team leader. Roma-143, Black Two, the intelligence expert. Otto-031, Black Three, the heavy weapons specialist. And Victor-101, Black Four, the sniper. Admittedly, and with all due respect, it's a rather... It's a rather... let's just say archetypical fire team structure. But I do have a fondness for Black Team, and I wish them the respectful peace that they deserve in their missing in action. While being trained by then Chief Petty Officer Franklin Mendez, Margaret and Otto secretly had a romantic relationship. Victor was jealous of them and reported them to Mendez, who sent them both to the brig, as romantic relationships were not allowed amongst the conscripted Spartan siblings, the kidnappees of the Spartan II program. Red Team heard of this and tracked down Margaret. In the ensuing struggle, Margaret lost her left eye to send the message that her team should take their training seriously. Soon, Black Team gave Red Team a beating in return and were given a 10-day stint in the brig as a result. The team and teams would never speak to each other or of the incident ever again. During the Human Covenant War, Team Black participated in numerous operations against the Covenant, including one where they destroyed a Covenant citadel and another in which they boarded a Covenant cruiser along C-12-shaped charges. In mid-2552, Team Black was sent to destroy a heavily fortified Covenant mining device within the ruins of Ciudad de Arias on the UEG colony world of Verge, to cut off the supply of energy to ships blockading Tribute. Roma encountered an apparently non-hostile Yanmei and convinced the other members that they could entrust the alien for intelligence on the area. Hopalong, as the Yanmei was nicknamed, led Team Black through underground tunnels that were hollowed out by swarms of Yanmei. Roma, during their attack on the Magelagolo and Kigyar positioned by each anti-gravity pylon, discovered that the Yanmei were psychopathic prisoners rather than slaves, as Hopalong had led them to believe. Team Black was able to set C-12 explosives just before Hopalong freed the hostile Yanmei inmates. Although Otto struggled with the swarm and was ultimately rescued by Roma, the team escaped the area and the charges on the pylons were detonated. Sometime after the mission on Verge, Team Black was assigned to Operation Blowback, a covert mission to Subsector 35 in uninhabited space, believed to be a significant Covenant supply route. They were assigned aboard the UNSC-commissioned civilian mining vessel Long Time Coming, with their cryo chambers hidden among prospecting equipment, with a mission to board or allow themselves to be captured by any Covenant vessels in the area, gather intelligence, and then destroy the ships from the inside. The AI construct, Iona, was assigned to assist the team in their mission. However, on its way to Subsector 35 in Slipspace, the Long Time Coming was significantly damaged by unknown bursts of energy. After the ship crashed on an uncharted moon, Victor was assigned to carry Iona within his Mjolnir suit. After Margaret was captured by mechanical gatherers, Victor and Otto reluctantly allied with the Covenant forces also on the moon in order to rescue their captured comrades and proceeded inside the vast line installation 1-4. While they were closing on the chamber where the captives were being held, the forerunner monitor of the installation, 686 Ebulent Prism, hacked into Victor and the Roma's Mjolnir HUDs, tricking them into attacking each other. Four was also reminded of his grudge against Otto and attacked him before Black Three and Iwana managed to remind him of the importance of his adopted family and snap him out of his tantrum. Meanwhile, Margaret managed to escape her cell within a Sinhali, Reftelame, and they found their way into the control room of the facility. Otto, Victor, and Roma then assisted Margaret against Prism in the installation's control room. Margaret managed to destroy the monitor with the installation's main gun, simultaneously bringing an entire Covenant fleet crashing down. Team Black then went out to fight to the survivors so as to commandeer a functional slipspace drive and to get off of the moon. Team Black ultimately escaped and returned to UNSC-controlled space. By July 2557, Black Team had been assigned to Installation 03. On July 25th, shortly after the Ur-Didax attack on Ivanov Station, Team Black was serving as security detail for a science camp in a desert on the Halo surface. Unaware of the recent attack on Ivanov, the Spartans were attempting to establish contact with the station where they noticed a large number of objects exiting slipspace and falling from the sky. One of the objects crashed nearby, prompting Black to investigate. The team made their way to the impact crater and discovered an unconscious Didact, who had been knocked into a slipspace rupture by John 117 during the New Phoenix incident. Unaware of who the Didact was, Team Black speculated the arriving objects to be an invasion force, though one member questioned the efficacy of the invaders given the Didact's unresponsive state. However, the Didact suddenly awoke. Furious at the sight of more Spartans, the Didact declared the humans' presence unacceptable and brutally killed Team Black along with nearby scientists one by one. Following the loss of contact within Black Team as well as the scientists, Admiral Terrence Hood sent Blue Team, including the Master Chief John 117, to Installation 03 to investigate the disturbance. Upon their arrival the next day, Blue Team found all four members of Team Black dead and were attacked by Promethean constructs shortly after. The impressive and unfortunate end to a 40-year career, Black Team remains a fan favorite outside of the universe and a favorite of mine within. Rest in peace, Margaret, Roma, Otto, and Victor. You can read more and see more of Margaret, Roma, Otto, and Victor in Halo Evolution's Essential Tales of the Halo Universe in short story Blunt Instruments, as well as the comic book series Halo Bloodline and Halo Escalation. From out of the endless depths of the Halo War Chest, the AV-49 Wasp appears. Manufactured by Mizraya Armory, the AV-49 measures 7.62 meters or 25 feet in length and 21 feet wing to wing. Considered fast to produce and easy to maintain and optimize, the AV-49 shares several similarities with its fellow Aerodynes, the AV-14 Hornet, AV-19 Skyhawk, AV-22 Sparrowhawk, and the AV-30 Kestrel. The aircraft features an integrated VTOL propulsion system that combines dual-lift ducted fan engines pioneered by the AV-30, with air-cooled vectored thrust fusion thrusters, man, say that five times fast, with air-cooled vectored thrust fusion thrusters for forward movement. Sheesh. The AV-49 also features twin 7.62 heavy machine guns, right below twin 50mm missile launchers, UNSC state-of-the-art energy shielding, and CyberLink-compatible fly-by-light avionics. Designed for expeditionary usage, the WASP can be easily prepped and deployed with minimal tools, and their hardened storage containers have identical dimensions to NavLOCCOM standard flat containers, simplifying interstellar transport logistics. Not really too important for you. The WASP was developed alongside the Stinger-class Mjolnir armor suit, which has two neural interface controllers to allow the operator to switch from flight to ground command modes at the speed of thought. The WASP augments existing stocks of AV-14 and AV-22 aircraft in Marine service. UNSC doctrine sees the WASP employed as a gunship escort for troop transports or on-call close air support for Special Forces teams. The Office of Naval Intelligence employs their own variant of the WASP, quite fun, one of my favorites to fly, using it for night sorties and stealth surveillance missions, which it is very good at, I must add. Although in use by 2553, just after the end of the 30-year war, the WASP was still undergoing field trials within the UNSC as of 2558. By this time, the Spartan Operations Branch was asked to assess its tactical utility for their specific needs, specific like how frickin' tall Spartans are, with Spartans able to test the vehicle in war games, simulations, or review prototypes manufactured aboard the UNSC Infinity in Hangar A-6. Due to their ease of assembly, Spartan Commander Sarah Palmer recommended that all Spartans aboard Infinity, during the height of her command, become familiar with this process. Pretty quick little episode. I'm almost surprised at how quick it's gone by. So, let's talk about Halo Infinite. Halo Infinite is fast on the horizon. I think I've touched on this a little bit, maybe even just in the last episode. But it is fast approaching, folks. We are currently October 11th, and by December 8th, a little less than 2 months from now, we will mostly be playing Halo Infinite. It's very exciting, but it's a fact that has yet to really settle in, so I'm going to speak mostly freely for the time being and try to stretch this out for everybody involved. I know not everybody's a big fan of the half-hour episode. Most of you seem to prefer the hour-long, if not two-hour-long, infamous episode. So, Halo Infinite. Is everybody out there excited? I would think so. Seems to be shaping up to be something worth getting hyped about. Though I try to temper that excitement, at least a little. It's something I've warned most of you out there listening to do as well, because nobody wants to be let down by something they love, by really anything they love. Nevertheless, a video game like Halo Infinite that promises to be your hobby for the next decade. Quite the claim. To varying degrees of success, I'm sure people will drop off at some point within 10 years, I'm sure. Even still, that we are likely to see a mainline sequel following its release probably sooner than 10 years from now, which would be almost 2032. Hard to comprehend. That said, I'm very much looking forward to it. I find that I've mentioned it before in the past, games like Destiny 2, a game that also intends to be your hobby to the best of its ability, is a game I got so involved with at one point I had to uninstall in order to advance my life. Had I not, who knows, I may not be sitting here talking to you in this very moment. So, I'm excited. I hope you're excited. I guess I'm just excited. I just want to share that with everybody out there. There's not too much meat to these potatoes, but It's settling in, folks. I bet it is with you too. The game is just around the corner, and I would think in less than a month, if not a month at the most, we are due to start seeing the full force of the Microsoft marketing train for this game, and that alone is very exciting, and I think takes us all back to being a bit of a kid again. And if you are a kid and you are excited or interested in Halo, well, I think you're in for a real treat. I think Halo's marketing historically has been some of the best and most well-produced of any games or game, or like really any media to date. We usually get some sort of live-action trailer. We get a lot of really great cut teasers, some more modern, some more traditional, plenty of purchasables, plenty of merchandise. There's a lot that comes along with the Halo's release, and it's really almost unparalleled to, I think, any other game in the industry. Call of Duty doesn't do this. Madden doesn't do this. Battlefield doesn't really do this. They don't market themselves in this way where it's, you would think it's almost suffocating, much like the atmosphere here on this Yanmei world. But truly, I mean, it's suffocating in the best way, especially since it's been such a long time coming, over 6 years by the time the game will release. Not to mention, I think, kicking off in November 8th, 12th, I'm foggy every time I mix these two up, we're due for the 20th anniversary of the Halo IP, which is just as, if not more, exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing the things that have been produced for that. I've heard murmurs and whispers in the streets that some of Halo's greatest content creators have been called upon to provide for such an occasion. I'm no doubt certain that there will be an official, larger scaled sort of celebration at hand for such an event. I remember the stops they pulled out for the 10th anniversary, 10 years ago, a little less than 10 years ago. I still have my 1 of 300 grunt plushie, which I gave a little bit of in-canon backstory to, but the truth is there's only 1 of 300 of these guys, and that was something that was produced 10 years ago for that event. I'm staring at him right now. Adorable. So it's a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be a Halo fan. I can think of very little better a time, to be honest. It seems like the game is going to swim. It seems like many other IPs are due to sink this fall, which I wish on no game or really any community, but it just seems like the other games in competition with Halo Infinite for that niche of the FPS genre and for that space within the industry, within the popular space of the FPS, it seems like they're looking to be duds unless they can really light a fire under their ass at the development, which is unfortunate because I don't know if there's a culture in place at those developers that is as healthy as the one for Halo Infinite amongst 343 Industries, at least in as so far as they've shown. Granted, there are 5 studios, I believe, 5 if not 6 studios currently developing for Halo Infinite, which is not something I think is the case with Call of Duty Vanguard or Battlefield 2042. Both games I am looking forward to, but I think much, much less, obviously. I don't have a Call of Duty podcast or a Battlefield podcast. And I think a lot of people, having played the more recent betas for those games, the quote-unquote betas, closed betas for those games, if you had pre-ordered those titles, are seeing that they're bug-ridden, much like Yanmei Hives. And they don't appear to be on track to function very well at launch, assuming that their launch isn't postponed, which I highly doubt. It's not something Call of Duty is known to do. Not something Battlefield is known to do. They are very much, I believe, at the whims of their shareholders. So those games will release on time in whatever state they are in. And there will no doubt be a day one patch, if not a day two patch, and a week one patch. Probably even a month one patch. And I bet a patch after that. They just don't seem ready. Halo Infinite has some telltale signs of not being ready. but is certainly a hell of a lot more polished than those two. And again, it's not really a competition. I mean, it no doubt is for the investors in each of these publishers and in each of these developers. But as fans of gaming as a whole and of the FPS genre therein, I don't think anyone's really in competition with each other, anyone above a certain age or maturity level anyway, that is. The console wars and IP wars are mostly come and gone, though you do see a little bit of it on the Twitter, and it's almost always sophomoric and hilarious. I encourage you not to participate. You look silly. I mean, you look downright goofy, truly. Just be appreciative for the stuff that we have. If it's in a poor state, well, you know, make that known, and maybe, just maybe, the next time it comes out, feedback will be heard and things will be fixed. Not always the case. But I do remember people saying something similar back during Halo 5, which I think many of you know my thoughts on that. I think many of you have heard the thoughts of the many on that title, and it seems 6 years later, though we may have gotten a Halo title 3 years ago had such feedback not existed, 6 years later we are due to receive what seems to be promising to be a return to the front of culture for Halo as a whole, which is very, very exciting. Did anybody out there see that, not my favorite band in the world, but you know, I don't, not one that I don't enjoy, 21 Pilots is out there playing the Halo Mjolnir mix theme to live audiences. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you would see and get and hear about around the release of Halo 2. How many years ago now? 18 years ago? Truly wild times. I think many of those band members were probably children like many of you listening and myself were along the launch of Halo 2. So it seems to be very much a return to form, as I mentioned, a return to the forefront of pop culture for Halo. I think that 6 year gap was somewhat required. I think people who are aware of and fond of Halo tangentially, not people that have a bi-weekly broadcast about that universe and lore, but people adjacent to myself and adjacent to the people that would listen to this podcast. They have a fondness for the IP, you know, generally as a whole. They have fond memories of playing on Blood Gulch, and that's the bulk of what they remember. Maybe some of the story beats, maybe they remember the story of Combat Evolved, maybe they remember the ending to Halo 3. Maybe the last thing they saw of Halo was the epilogue, the teaser at the end of Halo 3. And then they knew that Halo 4 existed, but maybe they got married. Maybe they had kids. Maybe they were in a low slump in life. Maybe they started a new job. They've never been back. And they haven't been back since 2012, and they weren't really aware of Halo 5. They're not really going to be aware of Halo Wars 2. Any of the mobile games, they're not going to be aware of the Dave and Buster's arcade thriller, Fireteam Raven, any of these things. They don't know that Halo has been going strong in the background of pop culture for a long, long time. And I'm hoping in about a month's time, they're going to be woken up. They're going to be shook awake to see and realize that, oh my gosh, Halo is back. That is very exciting. I hope the promise is fulfilled, truly, and as far as I can tell, it seems to be on track to be, just from the stuff that I've seen, again, haven't played, of either of the three flights that have been released to the public to date, the betas. The whispers and murmurs, without getting into too much spoilers of the direction of the story, I'll just say, seem to point very much into, I would say, some really decent writing, some really great writing. It's something I'm excited to see actualized, something to see visually on screen in front of me. I've only just read so much. Maybe we should do a closed envelope Halo Infinite predictions cast. I think that would be a lot of fun, huh? Maybe we'll bring some people on from around the content creation sphere, and we'll do a predictions cast going into the game. You know, what's going to happen? What will be the major beats? And then we'll reconvene after the game's released, and we'll see where we all fell. Maybe we'll find a way to tally up those predictions, and there will be a prize pool or something. I think that'd be fun. I'd love to hear your predictions. I've mentioned them before at nightwirepodcast@outlook.com. I would love to see your feedback there. Again, if you're a patron, feel free to direct message me anytime there. Feel free to at me on Twitter, ONI14122494BB. I mean, I would love to hear truly what you think the direction of Halo is after the launch of Halo Infinite. Will the game be a success in your eyes? I know nobody here wishes it not to be, but is there anything that's got you feeling like it won't be? You know, I am genuinely curious. I would love to hear that stuff from you guys. So please, we'll find a time and space to read those aloud in the future. For sure. I mean, I just need to stockpile them. I need you to send them in so I can stockpile them. How do we do? I think that was about 20 minutes. A little bit of cockpit talk, but that's okay. My boy, Owen the Lego King. Still my favorite informant, but my only informant. So I don't think you know, do you mind, Owen, if we get into a little cockpit talk like we just did? I don't think so. You know, if you do want to hear more cockpit talk, like maybe an hour of it, maybe even 2 hours of it, if I get enough water and a lubricated enough throat to go ahead and espouse that, patreon.com/ONI Nightwire at the favorite informant tier or higher for cockpit talk. Anyway, now we're getting lost. We're getting a walk in the woods here, folks. As always, thanks and salute to Super Agent Porpal Montage, developer of the Halopedia database, Agents CIA 391, Sith Venator, and Tacitus for their work on the board of bureaucrats. Administrators Bacon Shelf, Dab 1001, Jack Phoenix, and Rusty 112. Patrolling agents Moore Heck, Shaza Makazi, Jack Vibe, Dr. Mutran, and the Arbiter 117, as well as sister site agents Brian H, Commander Riley SV, Halo Prov, Carl 591, Kenny Annie Denny, and Ultra Force. Special thanks to contributing agents and their most recent additions to the databases referenced in this episode. It just dawned on me. I really hope the Yanmei come back for Halo Infinite. Don't you? I mean, we know that the Wasp, the Type 49 Wasp is coming back, but AV-49 Wasp. But I would love to see the Yanmei come back. I would love to see what 343 can do with them in a new design. There was... And maybe I'll post it on the Twitter. But there was concept art for a Yanmei sniper that was intended for Halo 4 that never made it into the game. It's a cool species, guys. Let's get them back into Halo. Maybe that's coming in the 10-year hobby that's releasing this December. Lots of room for expansion content, just gonna say. Again, thanks to contributing agents and their most recent additions, agents like Defeating Line, Lord Susto, Lunar Amethyst, the first time we're reading your name aloud, Necronter, Star Road Runner, I think that's the first two, welcome, The Eld, War Grauman 18, and Zavoy 12345. Of course, appreciation and all credit due to the thousands of agents working tirelessly to uphold and keep up to date the Halopedia database. Agents like you. Thank you. Additional appreciation to Carlos Carrillo for his efforts in Halo Original Soundtrack Compilation. Pardon me, my eye itched. as well as the remixed tracks heard beneath my voice on this program. Find more of Carlos's work, if you weren't already familiar, under the Classical Extranet site, YouTube, under his handle K-A-I-D-O-N, Kaidon. I am available all hours of the day, for you that is, thanks to the time dilation this Osmium Time broadcaster functions for, at your classic non-extranet upgraded web portals of Twitter, at ONI14122494BB. Tremendous and very special thanks to patron and favorite informant, Owen the Lego King. Join Owen and receive your agent shout-out at patreon.com/ONI Nightwire, where Brent Bagley is creating the ONI Nightwire podcast covering Halo news, though not often these days, and lore. To touch on that, I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, that we are due for a Inside Infinite October edition very soon here. I think that would be a good time to do a news roundup so we can bring some of the smaller bits of news that haven't really been too noteworthy all wrapped into one bundle for you. And trust me, I know news is in the name. We'll get back to the news. We've just been heavy on the lore. Regardless, patreon.com/ONI Nightwire. Now you're home to the courteous kickdown. Enjoy your coffee and pie. How about that little under an hour of free content? I thought so. How about a little tip? The new $2 drop a tip tier, where $1 earns you the agent shout out, like as in with Owen the Lego King, and another, the ad-free RSS feed of the now. At the $5 special agent tier, earn an agent shadow at the bottom of every episode, complete and future post-archive, episodes forever ad-free. Ads are here for the free RSS feed. Did you miss them? I doubt it. It's at the front of the episode. Made a whopping quarter off of that ad. A whole quarter. You let me know whether or not it's worth keeping in. 5% off the future ONI Top Clearance merch store. You heard at the top. I've edited this in a way that you will have heard it at the top of the episode. But a missing puzzle piece to the great adventure that in my life that is the ONI Nightwire broadcast, podcast, episodes, weekly, bi-weekly, everything in between, was the Discord, and it's officially live. So now I am full steam ahead on two things. One, recording the Nightwire nighttime read-along, and the other is getting the merch store locked and loaded, getting it up and ready for you guys. I have to find a way to two things, I think, of two minds on it. One is the merch store is only available to the patrons, to the Patreons, perhaps. And then maybe there's another merch store with more, simpler, more advertising apparel of the podcast for you. I don't know. Again, through committee, I want your thoughts. Get back to me. Let me know. You know the places to reach me. 3 months in, a very snazzy ONI Nightwire black ink sticker. It's very cool. Go check it out. $10 a month earns you the badge of favorite informant. All aforementioned benefits, 10% off the merch, daily dossier for next week's episode, the bonus podcast, now officially titled Cockpit Talk, a tremendous hit with many of you, special and free Patreon preview available in your standard RSS feed. I think we recorded that on September 29th. Yep, I'm going to stick with that. And it would so seem. Indeed, many of you were in fact seeking my own unedited and lighthearted opinions. And I am glad. I'm glad to record them and give them to you. For more enjoyable episodes, I invite to enlist alongside Owen the Lego King, at my favorite informant tier or higher. We will be waiting for you there. $20 a month marks you a high-value asset. All previous benefits, a special and custom daily dossier on you, in-universe, and written by yours truly. Not to mention a whopping 25% off the future merch. And best of all, a portion of your subscription goes into the direct purchase of a Halo story, accompanied with a chapter-by-chapter reading of said story by your humble host for easy listening and a smooth Nightwire reading. In this case, and as Addicted Down Upon Me by Owen the Lego King, will be Halo First Strike. The first chapter now completely read in full. And last and most fantastic, the $50 a month ASMR True Spook subscription. All previous benefits, early access to the bonus episodes, exclusive quarterly merch benefits, including the black ink sticker, the welcome back beverage mug, the total over-the-shoulder transfer expedient tote bag, and the stylish welcome back black hoodie, which I'm actually wearing one currently. Every 3 months, delivered to your doorstep without falter. Once a month, you decide the main topic of any episode, any format, any timeline, any hardware, and any battle. But that's not all. Be invited to be interviewed on Nightwire for a full-length hot seat Halo discussion. If that's not really your thing, then we'll figure it out together. To all levels, tiers, and patrons, head to patreon.com/ONINightwire or twitter.com/ONI14122494BB. To bear witness to the arrival of the Patreon exclusive, in-universe authentic, legendary veteran canon cap. Sharp black military style cap honoring your undying service to Earth and all her colonies, says it right on the back of the hat. Pulled straight from my future and offered exclusive to your past for a year of patronage. I intend to increase the value of the tiers and potentially introduce new and exciting tiers in the near future. In the 26th century, even your podcast is a live service. I intend to become your hobby for 10 years. So in the least, expect good value and, at the most, an endless opportunity to treat you for your devout listenership. Enlist at patreon.com/ONINightwire to secure your new home amongst the stars alongside fellow agents today. Once again, for all your share, care, and support, I thank you. Really, truly, without the little numbers going up after every episode, I wonder sometimes, would I record this? The answer is yes. In the past, the answer is no. In the past, I had more of a desire for clout than a desire to create. Now I have nothing but the desire to create. I find, maybe seemingly unhealthily to other people, that this is kind of what I do for fun. I put these together, I record these episodes, I put them out for you, I track their progress, I adapt and evolve the Patreon, I create and spend time designing for the new Discord channel, which I'm hoping will be a lot of fun in the future, bring more people to the show as people kind of build a bond with me and with the content that I'm putting out there, will want to participate and involve themselves in that content. I've seen it specifically and have been a part of it with the Sacred Icon podcast. And that Discord, I think, has fueled and driven a lot of the evolution of that show. Am I following in their footsteps? Absolutely. I think it was a masterstroke. Not every podcast out there has a great and wholesome Discord. I'm hoping to have one with this because I've seen it in Sacred Icon and I've been a part of it there. And it's been a huge part of my life. At least it was for the about year and a half that I've listened to that podcast, or that podcast has mostly been around. Big props again to Brian Spain and Jurassic Josh for, you know, their time there and the time that they put in, the blood, sweat, and tears they put in there. And they're always intent on being part of the conversation there, in and around the podcast, in and around Halo as a whole. You know, really, you know what, just forget my Discord. Just go join the Sacred Icon Discord. No, truly, I would love to kind of garner that conversation under my banner as well, but feel free to join both. I highly recommend it.
And links to the new Discord will be at the bottom of every episode henceforth. And again, we'll be in the banners and bios of the Twitter and Patreon. So if you're looking for a new home in the Discord platform, look no further than the ONI Nightwire Nightclub with a really snazzy little server icon, if I do say so myself. Really gets you in the boogie wonderland sort of mood. Well, that's about what I got time for. I have to tidy up my little hobbit hole that I'm living in. As I, you know, I am welcome where I am and studying the Yanmei here underground. They seem to be at the worst indifferent of my position here as I study. You know, they do seem curious of the technology, the osmium forerunner. You know, I can't, it's a read when I do that, guys. I can't off the top of my head. Let's see if I can remember correctly, and then I'll scroll up. The osmium time, I'm already off. The osmium, this is pretty telling, right? The osmium cylindrical forerunner deep space amplification antenna. Something meant to be read from word, not memorized, apparently. Maybe somebody out there, as I was stuttering over it, was like, dude, it's called the Osmium Cylindrical Forerunner Deep Space Amplification Antenna. You're the host of the show. How don't you know? I hope that guy exists, guy or gal exists. I would love to meet you. Join the Discord. Join the Patreon. That's about what I've got to add. I hope everybody enjoyed the Friday Frontline. I think people have been busy because it seems like, and no, there's nothing wrong with that. Just seems like we're putting out a lot of little gems in the rough. People are maybe busy with other Halo media. They're busy in life, getting ready for Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, any of the other festivities along the way and in between. Seems to be the case because I think listenership overall, and I've heard this from some of the other content creators that I'm friends with, it seems to be down. Viewership and listenership seems to be down. People are just apparently busy before the holiday sweep. Nothing wrong with that. But we're going to continue making great content for you when you return. When you return to this broadcast, you will be welcomed with plenty, plenty, plenty to fill your back catalog with. And we will continue to add to that next Friday. See you then. Thanks for listening. Have a good night. Be safe. Good luck. And goodbye.